Good afternoon, everybody. This is Carla Crotal from AHA Process Incorporated and the College Achievement Alliance, and we are happy to have you here this afternoon. I hope your weather is better than ours in Ohio, most places it usually is. I'm happy today to bring along an old friend of ours, Dee Atchell, and I may have butchered her last name because I usually just call her Dee. She came to the trainer certification in Texas a year or so ago and has been working first with Bridges Out of Poverty Concepts and now using the college-oriented book called Understanding and Engaging Under-Resourced College Students on her college campus with her fellow faculty and staff. Dee is such a courageous person that in the middle of the Train the Trainer seminar down there in Texas, she broke her arm and soldiered through the rest of the seminar regardless, and that's really something I have to say. So in a minute here, I'm going to turn this over to Dee, and I'd like her to begin by introducing herself and telling us a little bit about herself, her role at the college, a little bit about the college and their students, and then kind of take it from there. So, Dee, please take the stage.
My name is Dr. Dee Ackley, and I'm from the College of St. Mary in Omaha, Nebraska. The college is a small liberal arts college, and it is an all-women's college, which makes us a little different. There aren't very many of us in the country. We have about 1,000 students on campus, and our campus reflects the diversity of what you would find in Omaha. However, our mission is a little different than many colleges in the fact that we are a mercy college. And if you're Catholic, you understand that I'm not, so that was something I had to learn when I first came to the college. But a mercy philosophy is that your job is to serve underserved populations. And so in our case, we specifically reach out to young women who may not have otherwise gone to college. So we have a very large representation on college campus, and depending year to year, sometimes as high as 60% of our students are first-time college students, first-generation college students. We have done a specific recruiting in a couple areas. We have done some specific recruiting in the Hispanic population in Omaha. We actually have a recruiter who works primarily with that population, and we have built some bridges with two of the high schools where we go out and do some service learning and some work with them, their faculty as well, and that have very large Hispanic populations within their high school. And we also have a unique program on our campus for moms. So if you are a mom with two children, you can actually live in a dorm that's been built in an apartment-style living, and it's a brand-new dorm. It's beautiful. With your children for the same cost that costs someone else to live in a dorm. You may eat on campus. Your children eat on campus, same fee. One fee for the mom. The children are free. We have a daycare center on campus. We have a specific person who works with that program, actually two, one that lives in the dorm right there with them, and then a second social worker that's on campus. And our mom's program has an 85% graduation rate after 4 years and 92 after the fifth year. So it's very high retention rates and very strong supports for these young women. So I was kind of intrigued by the Understanding and Engaging Under-Resourced College Students and received a flyer in my email. And I use Ruby Payne's information with my students. I teach the classroom management class, and I also teach the multicultural education class, and we use some of Ruby's materials in those classes. And I was kind of intrigued, and so I, as Carla said, I came to Houston, and when I returned back to the college, the vice president said, okay, we paid for this, so tell me what we're going to do with this. And we decided that through our Teaching and Learning Center, we would provide a book study group in the spring, and we hope to get 10 to 15 of our 55 full-time faculty members involved in the book study group. Our TLC does a book study group once a year on different topics. Sometimes it's based around a common theme. Sometimes it's themes that faculty have suggested. And in this case, it was my attending this conference that was a catalyst to that. So we had a study group over 4 weeks, a lunch and learn, where you came, you got lunch, you were given the Understanding and Engaging Under-Resourced College Students. The agreement was that you would attend 3 of the 4 sessions. And if you did that, you got to keep the book. If you did not, then you were going to be asked to pay for the book. Not a single person had to pay for the book. And we had 20 faculty out of 55 full-time faculty and 5 staff. So we had 25 people who participated, which is a pretty good percentage for a small college as we are. So we quartered the book, and we did different discussion questions based on the book. Different instructors brought forth, this explains why. And I have the student I'm working with, and we began also to look at the kinds of resources that were available within our city that the average college professor might not know about. We made lists of things the college wished the college had support for, and all this information was carried back to our vice president of academic affairs. And after the faculty had done their 4 weeks, she came to me and said, I think our academic council needs to read this book. And so our full academic council, which is all of our vice presidents and the core members of our board, have now read Understanding and Engaging Under-Resourced College Students and have also done it in over 4 monthly meetings. And they did that beginning last May and finished in August. And because of that, some things have changed on our campus. And one of them is that we've always looked at our retention data in a certain way. We've looked at class, meaning major. We've looked at race. But we didn't look at those other factors. And now we have gone into our retention data, and we have looked at it from a couple of other things. And so we actually took our retention data and looked at the national trends. What were those risk factors that under-resourced college students might have? So part-time attendance, working full-time, having dependent children, lacking external financial support, delaying enrollment after high school or having a GED. We also looked at things that specifically went to our first-generation students, such as that intergenerational transfer of knowledge. They don't necessarily have someone in their family who says, oh, well, when you're at college, you do this. That, you know, you need to take 12 hours minimum credits, or that's 12 hours of work a week, or they don't always know our terminology. So, for example, one of the terms that they use at our college when I first got there is SFA, and I kept saying, what's a SAFA? I don't know what a SAFA is. And finally someone said, oh, that's just what they go down and sign all their loan papers and grant papers. Why do we call it SFA? Well, it's student financial arrangements. So those hidden rules, they don't always know. Those kinds of types of things, calling in and saying, I won't, or not calling in and just not showing up in class because something came up, and not always realizing that individuals needed to know. Future stories. I had a student last week who hit my office, and she was a transfer student. She has 9 children. She is returned to college, and when we sat down and wrote out her plan, she said to me point blank, I'm never going to make that. That's way too long. I will never finish school. And I said, yes, you will. We're going to take it one semester at a time. You're a good student. This will happen for you. And I got to tell her yesterday her student teaching placement for the fall, and she said, Dr. Ackley, when you told me 2 years ago that I would really be student teaching, I didn't believe you. So those future stories, those understanding that they can, that is the big picture. And then the social and bridging capital. Many of our students also don't have social supports that allow them to stay in school. We have girls who come to our mom's program from all over the country. So then when they get there and if their child gets sick, which they do, they don't have that mom or grandma here that can be their backup. They don't have a spouse here that might be their backup. Or their best friends are other moms in the dorm. So they're also trying to balance school and children. And so some of those social supports aren't there. It's helping bridge some of that with professors for us to understand that. And because of that, some of us have opened our homes at holidays and those kinds of things because these girls can't always afford to travel home. So those kinds of pieces made us look at our retention data. And so what we found is that when we want to really look at retaining students, there were some very specific things that made a difference on our campus. And so the 4 significant variables in our campus were ethnicity, whether or not you were a single parent, whether you were a resident or a commuter, and what your high school GPA was. And one of the things that we found was that our highest retention rate across our campus is our Hispanic population. Our young women who are Hispanic are our highest retention rate. If you were a single parent, and the next highest was white, and our last highest was our black retention rate. If you were not a single parent, you had a 69% chance of retention. If you were a single parent, it was at 32%. So those kinds of supports, even though we have supports on campus for our single parents, made a huge difference. Then we looked at if you were a single parent living on campus versus not on campus, and we found that was also a significant difference. We looked at declared majors and then looked at those declared majors against our retention data. And what we found is that if we had students who were taking full credits, living on campus, and were not a parent, they had a much higher retention rate across all ethnicities. The minute we threw parent and first generation in, it changed that. So it caused us to look at some of the programming we were offering on campus and to shift some things around. And so some of the things that we then looked at were some of the things that we could offer on campus. So some of the differences that we've made, we've added a non-credit class for single moms. It's voluntary, but it allows our moms to have kind of a support group. Our individual that was designated to work with our moms that lived on campus, we've now split that position so we have two people, one who works through the dorm and one person with a social work background who works specifically with parents' moms on campus. She offers different kinds of a support group. They have a couple times a month where they eat lunch together and lunch is provided. They provide some outings for the children, some celebrations on the campus that are safe and supported. We've looked at our Achievement Center. We found many of our students didn't have internet access, for example, when they got home. They couldn't afford internet access. So our Achievement Center, which is our tutoring center, is now available, open 24/7 by using your swipe card. So you can actually take your college ID and swipe and go in there at any time and work on the computers and have full access to anything you need in that building. And that was a new thing this fall, and it has just been phenomenal, the numbers of girls that have used it. We've also then looked at adding a bus pass situation. We didn't do that before. We are on a bus route. The bus system in Omaha is not the world's best public transportation, but we have students who have been walking, which I think was shocking. We were able to work with an organization and actually present a student with a car this year. We are looking at sponsoring a conference or co-sponsoring with AHA Process, a conference for understanding and engaging under-resourced college students on the college campus in November. And we have put together a full resource list that any faculty can get to on our intranet, which is our inner, our website for inside the campus, that tells you if you have a student who needs a food bank, who do you go to for referral? If they need a coat, if they need gas money, if they need rent money, all those things are available in what agencies. And that's available to everyone. Before I knew it, my social worker on campus knew it, and probably our director of student life knew it, but not every faculty member. And these came straight out of requests from faculty members who said, I now understand things I didn't before. Primarily, our faculty is made up of folks who were raised in the middle class. There's a few of us that were not. I'm a first-generation college student, and I think that's why Ruby's information and AHA Process's information means so much to me. I was the first one in my family to get a bachelor's. I was the first one in my family to get a master's and the first doctor in both sides of my family. So that was put me in a different position. I remember going to college as an undergrad and not having a coat. Didn't own one. My coat wore out, and I didn't have the money to buy one. And I didn't know the resources in the town that I went to college to get a coat. I would never have thought to ask for a coat. And a friend of mine's parents were down for a weekend and bought me a coat. And I'll never forget that. So I've always reached out to my college students, and they've all known my story a little bit. But this has allowed a few more doors to open, and I get phone calls from students who knock on my door and say, Dr. Ackley, how do I find? Someone told me you might know. And now it's not just me, but it's a community at the college who knows that. some things that we're additionally looking at. We're looking at next year doing some focus groups with some of these groups of students to find out why our retention rate is higher and lower, to ask what the kinds of supports the students wish were here. That's where the bus pass piece came from already, was from one of those focus groups. We are looking at adding some different kinds of services on campus based on those needs. We have really built a community around this focus, and I think we all knew that this was the population we worked with, but we didn't always all have the tools to do that, and I believe we're putting more tools out there. I'll be open to any questions, and let me know what I can do to help.
Thank you, Dr. Ackley. This is Carla Crotel. You've been listening to Dr. Ackley describe St. Mary College's journey using the work with understanding and engaging under-resourced college students. And I am just amazed at the progress you've made in such a very, very short period of time. One of the things that really stands out to me is how practical and pragmatic some of your solutions are, like having on-campus dormitories for students who are also parents, like having a social worker on campus. That's the kind of both rapid response and long-term support that is so key to developing a campus climate that proactively supports student success, as opposed to a campus that says, well, gee, we have everything we need, but the students just don't use it. Can you talk a little bit about the administrative leadership and the board leadership on your campus, and how did you go about winning them over and getting their support for these changes?
Well, and I think one of the things that we have going for us is this Mercy mission, because Mercy mission across the international Mercy is to work with underserved populations. And so our primary focus at the college, whether you're the president of the college or you're someone working in staff or you're a professor or you're working in the cafeteria, is that our job is to help these girls become who they can be. And that is the primary focus of the campus. So it's been that way for years. So this was just a vehicle for our campus to join together and say, oh, we didn't know this information. And so I didn't have to win people over because this is part of the mission. And if you work there, you live that mission. It's part of who you are, or people don't stay, because it's so much a part of what we do every single day on campus. So it wasn't a matter of winning the vice presidents over or the board. That's already their primary focus. But what I've heard over and over and over again is the information and knowledge they gained from the books that we read, the Understanding and Engaging Under-Resourced College Students, and the insight it gave them to some of the issues on the campus and how we might approach them differently to solve them. And I think that was the perspective, far more than having to win people over. And yes, we still have some people on campus who say, that's not my job, and there will always be those few. But they're few. This is a community effort.
That's wonderful. We'd like to answer any questions from the audience. Well, Dee, some of the changes that you described require money, and I don't know if how did you find those resources? Did you realign funding to make things work? Did you find other sources of money, or how did you fund some of these activities?
The Moms program has been on our campus for 10 years, so the new dorm that opened last August was built all through private funding. Our college, like every other college, is scrambling constantly to make sure that we have the funding we need to just pay the bills. We're nonprofit. We do not have a huge private endowment, but we do have some individuals who really are supportive of St. Mary. And so that new dorm was opened in August and is paid for. 100% donor support is paid for. We are a college of very little debt, so that helps, because our finances are our finances then. the Teaching and Learning Center has some funding. And so last year, when I came back in January with this information, we rechanneled some of the Teaching and Learning Center monies that are used for staff development to purchase the textbooks, for example, for understanding and engaging under-resourced college students. One of my goals, personal goals, that is that we're going to eventually offer investigations as one of our first-year seminars. My teaching load right now doesn't let me do that, though I'm trained. And so I'm hoping that we're going to get some additional people at the training in November so that we will offer that as first-year seminar. And, in fact, I've been planting some seeds to some faculty who I think are very would be very good at offering that first-year seminar. So the college did some shuffling of funds. Some of the things have been paid for by private donors. We have a scholarship program on campus specifically for women called the McCully, which is named after the foundress, Sisters of Mercy. And that is actually a full ride to school. And in order to qualify, you have to be a young woman who has overcome something to come to college. So, for example, the young woman I just talked about with the 9 children, she has a McCully. It pays her books. It pays her tuition. And if she lived in the dorm, it would pay her dorm expense. She does not live in the dorm, but it pays for her books and tuition for her to come to school. And I believe it even gives her a meal plan on campus since she doesn't live in the dorm. So she can actually even eat some meals on campus. And along with that, because she was trying to work as well as come to school and take care of children, one of which has significant special needs, the college hired her to work in our athletic center, our athletic center, and she actually offers the aerobic and the yoga classes that are done through our campus rec system. So that way her part-time job was in on the campus, allowing her not to have to be so spread out. So there's a lot of supports, and there's a community approach, and I think that makes a difference.
Again, we'll take any questions from the audience. I'll ask one more question and ask the audience to think about a few other things because this is so intriguing. Without having investigations, for those of you who don't know, Investigations into Economic Class in America is a textbook for under-resourced students. It can be used as a credit-bearing course where the students investigate various aspects of economic and social class, the impact on themselves as individuals or families, and the impact in the community. We here at Youngstown State University have found that students who take that course seem particularly able, willing, and eagerly ready to provide advice about how we can do things better. It just seems to prepare them to cope with the kind of meeting mentality that happens on a lot of campuses and how to communicate their needs. I noticed that you were going to have some focus groups and that you have a kind of a non-credit experience for your students. And I'm just wondering how you are fostering attendance or participation with that. I honestly have had some difficulty with that at Youngstown State University, that variety of non-credit things that we've tried to do that just don't quite get off the ground for these students who have such busy, busy, busy lives. What are some of your secrets?
Well, one of the things that they do is that non-credit class is offered over lunch. So they actually bring the food there, and that wouldn't happen if we didn't have the chef at the cafeteria that we have. Matt is a first-generation college student.
Oh.
And he is the first one in his family to have achieved. He manages our whole food service program, and he's a chef on top of it. He's a wonderful man. And so he says to them, I'll make sure there's something really good for lunch that day, you know. And and it's actually served there, so they can just come with their food service card, and they tally it, and they can eat. And truthfully, I'm not sure how closely they track that. I'm sure that if a student showed up and didn't have her food service card, they feed her anyway. It's part of the mercy. You always provide a cup of tea. Food is never a shortage on that campus. So they feed these students. And so the non-credit class is over the noon hour. So it's a time when they would be between classes, and they've built food in. And since many of the girls have food programs, it doesn't cost that much because they've already paid for the food plan, and Matt's willing to track it that way. So that makes a difference, I think, because we're feeding them, and it's at a time of the day when they wouldn't normally have other classes to conflict. We try to offer some things in the evenings as well over in the dorm. So in January, I'm actually going over and doing a mom's and tot class, and we're actually going to make kites out of recycled paper, plastic bags, and then we're going to go out to the soccer field and fly them. And I've gotten several volunteers from across campus to come and do that with me, trying to help these moms find inexpensive things they can do with their children. We have two parks right within walking distance. So helping our moms know those kinds of resources are available, they're safe. Our moms come from all over the country. We are in the central part of the city, which is a very safe part of the city. But if you come from a small town in western Nebraska, the city doesn't feel very safe at first. And so for them to feel less threatened and to venture out. So in April, we're going to do a kite flying event. We've done some things on teaching your children about money, on grief. We had a child that died of an illness a few years ago, and I went in and did some things on grief. I've gone in and done some things on children and stories. Other faculty have also gone in and offered their expertise. Last year, one of the faculty members did some things on community gardening, and the moms that were going to stay in the dorm over the summer actually put together a small community vegetable garden that then they could have some fresh things for salads and those kinds of things in their small apartment dorm rooms if they didn't want to eat, for example, in the cafeteria or when the cafeteria was closed. And we're going to do that again a little bit more expanded this next year. So, it's a whole community effort. It's not just one person's effort, and I think that makes a difference. There's a lot of buy-in on campus. And because the professors have said this has offered me such an insight into some of my students that I didn't understand, they've been the ones saying to other people, you need to read this book, you need to read this book. And I think that makes a difference.
To get back to your hope to answer and to offer investigations as a course, how would you structure that? That is, what particular department would that be under, and how do you plan to recruit students for the course?
Well, we've already talked to our head of our general education component or our core component, and Sister Aileen has already talked with me. We have a first-year seminar that we require of all first-year students, so any freshmen coming in. And then if you are a transfer student, you have the option. If your GPA isn't of a certain level, you may be requested to take a first-year seminar because it kind of orientates you to the campus. And so we're looking at it becoming a first-year seminar option. And so it would be offered in that format. And first-year seminar is a one-credit course that is offered usually your first semester while you're on campus. We've also looked at, we have some developmental courses that are available through our Achievement Center, which is our tutoring center. Remember I said it was open 24/7? And so we've looked at also offering it as a non-credit lunch kind of situation there as well. And so that's what we're investigating now, is where we think the best platform is, and the fact that we may offer it in a variety of ways if the demand is there.
Thank you. And are there other questions or reactions from the audience? Do you think that the activities that they've been engaging in are worthwhile? Are you jealous as all get out that they got their computer labs open 24/7. Such a simple thing, such an elegant solution to one of the most pressing problems our under-resourced students have. And yet, how do you move that bureaucracy if you're not in a mission-driven institution like Dr. Ackley is? What are your thoughts?
This is David from Lewiston, and this, for me, both of our experience with Walla Walla Community College and also with Lewis Clark State College in Idaho, one of the things that really sets the tone with staff and faculty is offering the Bridges Seminars and the Poverty Simulations. It takes it out of the intellectual, remote kind of experience and puts it in a real sense to people that may really feel a new appreciation for what the first generational student is going through by going through those experiences. So I highly recommend sort of setting the groundwork with the faculty and staff and then doing ongoing follow-up to make sure that those concepts are continued in conjunction with the course that you're talking about.
This is Dee. Can you tell me a little bit about the poverty simulations you've done? We've looked at several. We've not done one yet, and one of the things we're looking at for our faculty development for the fall is to actually incorporate a poverty simulation. Can you talk a little bit about what you've done?
Well, actually, we have two different models. We purchased a poverty simulation kit from the Community Action Partnership back in the Midwest and ran probably 30 poverty simulations through the community, through the colleges, and through different places. Recently, in the last 6 to 8 months, we've also adopted another poverty simulation that's been created by Think Tank right there in Ohio that is part of the National Circles Initiative. And basically, it sets up a three-hour experience where people are assigned roles in a family, and they're asked to go ahead and replicate what it would be like to get through a week of 15 to 18 minutes, managing some of the challenges that you're already touching on very, very nicely. What I like about the Think Tank one is it does have a more enhanced college function and some other things that are different than so. I think it's just it's a good experience. The important part, of course, is the debrief afterwards when you discuss what kind of implications it has, what experience was, and what aha moments they had, pardon the pun.
Thank you. I'm on the Faculty Development Committee. I'm chairing it right now and maybe taking on a little bit different role in the college in the fall. And so this is one of the things that we're talking about for our faculty development is to look at a poverty simulation. Just take one more step, you know, and to possibly have some people who weren't involved before newly involved. So thank you. That's a great resource.
I'm not 100% sure about what I'm going to say next, but I might be right. And that is that the poverty simulation kit and method of hosting these events was developed by the Missouri Association of Community Action. So you can order the materials through them and find out about being trained to do it. It's really not that hard to facilitate. There's a lot of logistics to set it up, and, you know, you sort of want to set the stage and then afterwards debrief the audience. But it's in our area, in Ohio, for example, the statewide Second Harvest Food Bank folks in Columbus, Ohio, will come free of charge any place that they're asked to come. And they bring the kit, they bring the facilitator, and you just have to produce the people who are going to be the participants, and then also the people who are going to play the roles of staff. And the staff people, you know, I mean, this is a poverty simulation, so you've got participants who take on the roles of people in poverty, but then also people who take on the roles of the mortgage loan collector, the pawnbroker, the teacher at the school, the employer. And my students here at Youngstown State love to play the roles of the community entities. You know, some of them can be the person working at the welfare department, and one person can be a policeman. And it's fun for them to kind of flip that role and experience how you feel when you're the one with all the power and you're the one that's turning people away and telling them that they can't get what they need and what they came for. So it's a pretty engaging experience for students as well.
I was going to say, that's a great resource for your students to participate and to contribute also. And they should be a part of the debrief just as much as the participants, because they may have some insights in terms of experiencing the frustration of not being able to help because of the rules and the regulations and the confinements, the constraints of their roles.
I'm taking notes. This is Dee. I'm taking notes. This is something we want to do for the fall, so I was hoping someone on this call would have an idea.
And while we're waiting for another question or comment, this is Barb, and I will just interject here. The event that Dee was talking about that will be at College of St. Mary in November will be our second trainer certification, College Achievement Alliance Trainer Certification of the Year. And the dates for that are November 4, 5, 6 for the trainer certification to become a certified College Achievement Alliance trainer, and November 7th then for the investigations facilitator training. And that information is up on our website. If you go to www.collegeachievementalliance.com and then you go to event training dates, you can find that information. So we hope that you will join us in Omaha, unless you join us first in Charlotte. Both nice venues.
Carla, if you want to send me Dee's email, I'll share her information about the poverty sim, or do you want me to send it directly to you?
You can send that directly to me.
Okay.
And who is that? Is that Dave?
David, okay. And Lewiston.
Okay. And my email address is bduncanson, bduncanson, @ahaprocess.com.
Any other questions or thoughts from our audience? All right, folks, Dr. Ackley, thank you so much for sharing the information about the wonderful work you've been doing there. It's inspirational. And, I guess one of the things that I wanted to add is that it's wonderful that your college is mission-driven with the Mercy mission. And I just feel that that is something that needs to become better imbued into especially our public universities and community colleges. If we admit first-generation low-income students, I think that we are morally and ethically bound to figure out how to educate them. I always make the analogy that, you know, if two-thirds of the time you took your car to the car mechanic, you didn't fix the car, you probably would find a different mechanic. And yet we seem pretty content with the notion that two-thirds of our first-generation low-income students never graduate. And we seem to feel that that's a student problem, not an institutional problem. So I will leave you with that provocative thought, unless anybody would like to say anything else. I hope that we see some of you in Charlotte and in Oklahoma. And you can always stay in touch through, I think we're on Facebook, the College Achievement Alliance, and a lot of other information about the work that's being done is on the AHA Process website. So please don't hesitate to email Barb Duncanson with any questions or myself. She can pass them along to me. And Dee, would you like to make any closing remarks before we wrap it up?
I would just say that we'd be glad to, you know, when we bring the training to Omaha to bring some students in if someone wanted to do something over a lunch where they got to hear some of the girls' stories. I think we have some students who'd be happy to share some things that have happened for them. I know we have some video as well, but we're proud of what we do, and it's what keeps me going to work every day is those students achieving and becoming who they're going to become. And I think spring's my favorite time because I get to go out and visit student teachers and see them really be teaching. And many of these young women never saw themselves as accomplishing this, and they are. So that's one of the things I'm most proud of.
As well you should be. And thank you so much for your hard work and for sharing your time today. Barbara will be sending out a link to the recording that you're welcome to share with other folks. Barbara, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Just a very hearty thank you to Dee. I think that her presentation today also shows us the power of one person launching this without a whole lot of resources to launch it. Of course, some of the pieces were in place already, but in terms of launching the study,
this, I think, the study that's really shifted a lot of paradigms there. I think that this definitely exhibits the power of one person. One person can do it. Thank you, Dee, for being that person.
Yeah. All right, folks. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.